Men and women alike, in various states of undress, were taking turns leaping off the shell's outcroppings with whoops and shouts, plummeting towards the waters far below. Rizin grew nauseated just watching them. How high up were they? They do it to shock you. They always jump from greater heights when a foreigner is around. Rizin nodded, then, with a sudden start, realized that the comet hadn't come from one of her guards. She turned and discovered that to her left, the forest had moved back around a large outcrop of shell like a rock mound. There, hanging upside down and tied by his feet to a point at the top of the shell, was a lanky man with pale white skin verging on blue. He wore only a loincloth, and his skin was covered with hundreds upon hundreds of small, intricate tattoos. Heroes of presents Stormpod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 2, Words of Radiance. This is just a quick spoiler warning for Interludes I3, Rizin. This is a really, really large interlude. It's almost bigger than some of the chapters we've covered so far in this book. So I just want to make sure that if you are not caught up in your reading yet, please go back and read. And if you are all caught up because you've already read this book and you're using us as a reread, then please enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and you know, it's weird. I'm surrounded by shame sprint over here. I guess it's because he decided to do this podcast naked. It's Jack!
Oh. You weren't supposed to tell them.
My eyes! Dude!
I've been slipping into mate form. I'm sorry.
That's it. You found yourself an alcove? Is that what you...
I keep stopping by these alcoves, and I get into mate form. I can't seem to get out of it.
Sex alcoves.
It's a seasonal thing.
You know, alcoves are not, probably the grossest thing ever.
Just hang on a second. I just got to take some time out because I just was walking past an alcove.
I saw you looking at me. Do you want to duck into this alcove over here?
You want to hit that alcove?
So how's it going?
Good. It's going good. This Rizin chapter, this is going to take me a little bit by surprise. There's a lot to say about it, so we should probably
get to it, as they say.
But
it's pretty fantastic, right? Like, what do you think overall of these, like, Reshi people, these floating islands on the backs of great shells?
Oh my gosh, the imagery is unreal. And again, I have to say, this goes way beyond it, but in terms of the imagery, you know, I was thinking about Morla from The Neverending Story, mm-hmm. The giant shell. Yeah. I was thinking about video games like what's this Colossal Slayer, these kind of massive, you know, creatures that you can climb on top of and adventure on top of.
Yeah.
This was like, and then of course I was also thinking of James Cameron's Avatar because it described like how, you know, how humid the weather was and how hot the jungles were.
Right.
And as you went deeper into them, like this chapter is just lousy with fantastic imagery. Loved it.
Yeah, me too.
I absolutely loved it. He's, you know, at every turn in this world, he's just continuing to develop, you know, rich and new and interesting ideas. And this was a big one.
It's funny because like Vistam, the Babsk and Rizin are sort of not really super interesting characters right now. It's the places that they've gone that are really interesting, right?
That's a fair point.
Completely loving these two characters, but like really, like, you know, the first time we read about them, they went to Shin and dealt with the Shin people. And that was like, oh my God, great. We get to know a little bit more about the Shin people. And now here, right. These Reshi, like, tribes folks, or are they part people, of like a weird and island cult or something? Like,
well, see, so I was thinking of the Leonardo. I mean, I know it's a book. I should read the book. I've been told the book's amazing. It's called The Beach. This Leonardo DiCaprio kind of thing. So that's kind of what I was thinking too. Is that it's this kind of like hippie kind of commune,
right?
Sort of
on a floating great shell.
On a floating, gigantic great shell.
I know.
It's ludicrous. It's fantastic. It's very visual. And I also like how kind of Lord of the Flies it can seem, too, that these reshi, it seems like it's all about fun and games and we're jumping off the highest thing, but they're actually, you know, challenging you.
Yeah.
And if they read you the wrong way or pick up on something that they don't like, they can turn on you.
Yeah, it seems like it's all fun and games on the surface. But then, you know, Vistam Herbapsk says, not all people are carefree here.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, can I just say that I just love saying the word Babsk.
Me too. Even though I have a hard time saying it.
It is so fun to say.
Yeah.
I just catch myself every time it's brought up. I'm just like, that is just so much fun.
I wish I had a Babsk.
So do I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though
absolutely.
We do learn later.
I want one.
I don't know if we really want that because we do learn later in this interlude, actually, that Risen is property belonging to Vistam.
Right.
He owns her.
He owns
her apprentice, as his apprentice, until she becomes a merchant herself. Then she graduates out of slavery or something. Like, what a crazy.
I guess out of servitude.
Indentured servitude, maybe.
But it's also servitude in order to gain aptitude.
And I think that it's a choice too. Like, we don't know much yet, but I think that Risen has chosen this. In her life, she wants to become a merchant, and in order to become a merchant, you need to sell yourself. You need to be a deal has to happen. A merchant has to purchase you.
And what a way to make the deal this story!
It's so good, dude. It's such a good chapter.
When you think about it, all of this is all about one interaction.
Right.
I mean, this is about one. If I had to bring it into D&D, this is like one persuasion check.
It's a persuasion check that builds up though, right? Like,
right. Yeah, yeah. It's just, I love it that it comes down to like a skill check.
Right. And it's funny because it's like your DM has allowed you to say as much as you wanted to and make these really great speeches and great points.
Yeah.
But at the end, if you fail that one check, you're fucked.
You're done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Negotiates are over. Okay. So, so Risen, she's got this pot of shin grass.
Right.
That she's got with her.
This is from the last book, right?
Yep. She sits down on her catamaran, and again, the imagery is just great. I don't know if all of our listeners, of course, you're familiar with what a catamaran is.
Mm-hmm.
This sort of like a pontoon like boat. They're out on the Reshi Sea. It says here that the precipitation here on the sea was the worst kind.
Yeah.
Not mighty or impressive like a high storm. Not even insistent like an ordinary shower. Here, it was just a misting haze, more like a fog, but less than a drizzle, enough to ruin hair, makeup, and clothing, indeed, every element of a careful young woman's efforts to present a suitable face for trading. So I think it's funny that this is in the list of things that Risen is concerned about.
Right. And she's going with a people who give two fucks about hair and makeup and like, you know what I mean?
Right. But it's funny that she's so concerned with it. She's named the grass in the pot.
Yeah. I love this.
Tivnik.
Yeah.
Or Tivnik. Tivnik.
I think Tivnik's nice. I say Tivnik, I think.
Tivnik.
Not that I go around calling grass Tivnik a bunch, like, you know.
So, next when one of my clients asks, what kind of grass have you put in? Instead of Miscanthus or Calamagrassus, so I'll have to say, it's a Tivnik.
It's a nice Tivnik.
It's a nice Tivnik, and they won't know.
It's a Californian Tivnik.
Her Babsk had laughed at the name. Yeah, I'm laughing too, because it's quite cute.
Yeah.
But it's not as cute as Babsk.
Yeah.
So Risen chose not to be sullen at being proven so clearly wrong. She'd let her plant be sullen instead. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, because remember in the last interlude with them, Vistam traded soul-casted iron
right.
To the Shin, and they traded chickens?
Yes.
And the Shin are like, we don't know what the fuck you want these chickens for. Yeah. Seriously, they're worth nothing to us, but here you
go. Nothing to us.
And apparently it turned out to be really good because they made a whole bunch of money. And they say a little later, they were able to pay for this whole expedition with the chicken money.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so funny.
Today, the waters were shockingly still, almost as serene as those of the Pure Lake.
Mm-hmm. We know about the Pure Lake.
Yeah. Well, and again, what a great image. So it's the Reshi Sea, but it's as calm as this Pure Lake that we've seen. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like that. And it's a direct contrast in terms of what's about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Vistim himself rowed two boats over in their irregular flotilla. Paddled by New Parshman, the 16 sleek catamarans were laden with goods that had been purchased with the profits of their last expedition. He looked like a little more than another bundle of cloth. This is the description of Vistim.
Right.
Almost indistinguishable from the sacks of goods. I just got to say, I fall in love occasionally very often with the way Brandon Mr. Sanderson puts things. And again, describing Vistim as a bundle of cloth, almost indistinguishable from the sacks of goods. Oh, man, I just pictured that so well.
Yeah, it's so funny. Eh? You could see a lining of bags of goods and then a guy who looks like and his head sticking out of the bag or something.
Yeah. I just love the... I'm loving the language.
So she says here that he's going to be fine. People got sick and he'd become well again. And then she thinks to herself, but you saw blood on his handkerchief.
Yeah,
so it sounds like he's a little sick.
Right.
Or at least that's what she's supposed to believe. We'll find that out a little later.
Right. So Gu, the flotilla's guide, rowed in her own boat just behind her. He looked a lot like a Pure Laker with those long limbs, leathery skin, and dark hair. Every Pure Laker she'd met, however, had cared deeply about those gods of theirs. She doubted Gu had ever cared about anything.
Gu.
So, this is kind of interesting, those gods of theirs. So, it doesn't seem like Risen is particularly...
religious?
This is kind of, it's a bit, I don't know what the proper word is. It's like foreshadowing the fact that she's not really all that interested and yet will have to entertain this very thing in order to
close the deal. She'll have to double down on the idea of these Reshi gods and actually have to go talk to one or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So he says to her, you said we were near. Or no, sorry, this is she. She's talking to...
Yeah, she's asking the guide.
Yeah. We are. Soon now, he spoke Thalen rather well. Define soon, Risen says. Define... Well, what do you mean by soon? Soon. Today, maybe. Again, this is just funny.
Yeah, maybe. delightful, she thinks.
Yeah, delightful. Gu continued to paddle, only doing so on one side of the boat, yet somehow keeping them from going in circles. What do you make of that?
He's just really well skilled at
rowing.
It's
either he's well skilled, or there's something else is going on. At the rear of Risen's boat, Kilrim, head of the guards, played with her parasol, opening and closing it again. I like this little bit. It shows, I think I underlined the next few lines here, it shows how rarely Vistim's workers get back to civilization. So, you know, they're fascinated by these little things, these contrivances as a parasol.
Yeah.
So again, it's sort of like the company that Vistim is keeping really doesn't, participate all that much in higher society.
Right. I think these people here, the one that's oh my God, this is such a wonderful, wonderful invention, this parasol, is...
opening and closing it.
They're like, you. I think you said that they're just not the smartest bunch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're Kylrim or whatever his name is, Kylrim, is just a guard, right? So he's probably not, not too swift. His intelligence is pretty low.
Okay, so Goo says, hard. Patterns are off these days. The gods do not walk where they always should. We shall find her. Yes, we shall. Risen stifled a sigh and turned forward. With Vistam incapacitated again, she was in charge of leading the flotilla. That was the trouble with islands that moved when they were trying to find their destination. So right. That I had to underline because I'm like,
what?
Oh, this is cool. Yeah. What do you mean? Because mm-hmm. I don't know what's, yeah, don't, what's about
yeah,
to happen.
Yeah, this is the first hint of it, right? We don't know anything about
right. Moving
islands or at first you just think this island moves. Great. But
right.
you don't know why right. it moves, but it's just a right. Moving island. Great.
Encouraged by the wind, gentle waves lapped against the stiff branches which reached out of the waters like the fingers of drowning men. Again, that's the sound I'm going to make when I love the words that are...
You're going to make it sound like you got something caught in your throat? Oh, I really like that.
The sea was deeper than the Pure Lake, with its bafflingly shallow waters. Those trees would be dozens of feet tall at the very least, with bark of stone. Goo called them Ina, which apparently meant bad. They could slice up a boat's hull.
So yeah, there's like these trees growing out of the Reshi seas, and you got to be really
right. Careful
when you're going, you know, you're making your
right. Way
towards this island or your boat's going to get ripped up.
Well, and this is it. So she says here that she didn't even know how Goo knew how to steer clear of them.
Right.
She just had to trust him.
Right. And that's what you do when you're in a weird land with a guide.
Right.
You have to trust your guide, right?
So it's just, the whole thing is just so strange. She's with these two guys. One guy's opening and closing a parasol. Mm-hmm. The other guy is steering this flotilla, and he appears to do it really skillfully,
right.
you know, using
one paddle,
using strokes on only one side,
yeah.
and still not going perfectly through this. And then she's noticing these structures that would destroy the ship at a moment's notice.
Yeah,
it's just really unnerving. It's pretty cool. And then she sees land.
Yeah,
and she stands up on top of the catamaran, and Goo says, "Ah, see, soon."
Yeah,
it's great.
It's so good.
I love it. Oh, I connected with Risen here because it says here at the bottom of page 203 in the paperback, says here, the parasol barely helped, though it was waxed to double as an umbrella. In her excitement, she hardly gave it or her increasingly frizzy hair a thought. So in that my hair tends to go on the...
And it's increasingly getting frizzier, let me tell
it's
you.
It's increasingly getting frizzier.
You can't.
So
you guys
gonna...
can't see him right now, but I can see it, and it's a frizz fest over there.
That's why I wear those toques for the ugly mugs, because if I was to lay it out...
Scare off the patrons. Holy shit, I'm taking my money back.
that's just hair with eyeballs. Okay, the island was much bigger than she'd expected. Yeah, no kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Like a boulder in a field. There didn't seem to be any beach, and it wasn't flat and low, but mountainous. It's so green, she says, and I love that image too. It's so green. I just could really imagine that right away. The Taina is a good place to grow, Goo said. Good place to live,
mm-hmm.
except when it's at war. Risen says, when two islands get too close, she'd read of this in preparation, though there were not many scholars who cared enough about the Reshi to write of them. Dozens, perhaps hundreds of these moving islands floating in the sea. The people on them lived simple lives,
right.
interpreting the moments of the islands as divine will. Dude, this is so cool.
It's so cool.
It says, what did it say, dozens or hundreds of them?
It says dozens, perhaps hundreds.
So she says, so when two islands get close, and he says, not always. Sometimes close Taina is good, sometimes bad. Well, what determines? Why, the Taina itself. The island decides, Risen says. What was her Babs expecting to gain by trading here? How can an island... And then she gets interrupted here. Then the island ahead of them moved.
Yeah.
The island's very shape changed, stones twisting and undulating, a huge section of rock rising in a motion that seemed lethargic until one appreciated the grand scale. The rock, the leg, lifted, streaming water like rainfall. It lurched forward, then crashed back down into the sea with incredible force. Oh, dude, this is just giving me...
It's amazing.
When I was reading this, I just was so there. I couldn't, like, just imagining the slow lift of the leg and, you know, the water dripping off it like a waterfall.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's just so incredibly beautiful. And on their approach, can you imagine approaching this thing? Like, you're thinking to yourself, yeah, I'm just going to do a little business. So, yeah,
I'm just gonna
happens
go,
to be on this.
See that gigantic monster over there? I'm just going to go over there. Yeah, the Taina, the gods of the Reshi Isles, were great shells.
Yeah, this makes the Santhid look like a
Yeah, it's true, right? You're right, though. We were like, wow,
Shallan.
The Santhid's so huge. And then it's like, the Taina was like, hold my beer.
Yeah, hold my the Taina, yeah.
Yeah, I love this part here where she's like, this was the largest beast she'd ever seen or ever heard of. Big enough to make my mythological monsters like the chasm fiends of distant Natan-Natan, or Natan-Natan, depending on how you say it, seem like pebbles in comparison.
Like pebbles, yeah. I love that.
Remember how monstrous that chasm fiend was that Elokar, Adolin, and Dalinar fought?
And
Dalinar catches the claw at the beginning?
Yes,
is like...
Prevents it from...
This would eat that chasm fiend as a snack, like a little...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, this thing is absolutely monstrous. It's just a gargantuan, like, it's just on a scale... it's almost, you can't even comprehend it scale.
No. Yeah.
Because it's literally a moving island and it's huge. It has its own ecosystem growing on its back.
Mm-hmm. A whole
like
culture, a series
it's
of cultures,
crazy.
Really. Like,
and then I like how she says here, like, why didn't anyone tell me?
Yeah, exactly.
And Gu says, it's better to see. And take away that moment of discovery, Kilrum says.
Yeah.
I remember when I first saw one move. It's worth not spoiling. We never tell the new guards when they first come. I thought that's cool that they have enough sense to, like, let someone be awed by this.
Right. It makes
sense. That's really cool.
Doesn't it make sense to you?
That's really cool. Yeah.
Because to me it makes sense.
Totally.
Like, you know, it's almost like an unspoken rule that you don't ruin this amazing moment for someone.
Kind of like, I kind of feel like how you're kind of doing that in protecting me with...
I'm trying to. I'm trying not to tell you about the Taina. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, she's full of questions here, right? She like right away goes into like, oh my God, what is it? She's like, what do they eat? Did it even know that people lived on its back? Did it even care?
Yeah.
Like, she's like, what was mating like for these monsters?
Yeah.
And to quote Eshanai, I would think it was probably a complete disaster. Like Eshanai said that her love life was when she was a mate for him.
Yeah, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
Right.
Can you imagine, dude, two islands fucking? It'd be like Godzilla getting it on or something.
Oh, I can't...
You know,
this is way bigger. This is way bigger than God. That's the thing.
Imagine
like
the alcove these things would need. Imagine the size of the alcove these things would need to get it on.
I don't know how you would get an alcove. That
I don't think alcove is even the right term anymore.
An alcove might have to be like a black hole or something. I'm just going to pop off over here for a minute. No, that's getting into cosmic.
Yeah, let's not go too ahead of ourselves.
We're not on Roshar.
We're not talking about the Cosmere here.
Okay. It had to be ancient. I like this. The boat that they're on drew into its shadow. The greenery growing across its stony skin, shale bark mounds, creating vast fields of vibrant colors, moss coated nearly everything, vines and rock buds wound around trunks of small trees that had gained a foothold in cracks between plates of the animal shell. Dude, I was like...
It's amazing,
so
right?
jonesing like, out about that.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining all this lust. I mean, I'm imagining, earthly plants, things that I know of, you know, bromeliads.
Yeah.
But she finally sees the people, a group of youths... that are on this thing, male and female, and they're climbing onto a ridge of the shell, and they're leaping into the sea and they seem to be having quite a good time at this.
Oh,
this
yeah.
sort of frolic.
Yeah, and they're like naked is, and...
Yeah, yeah, naked or mostly naked, and they... this is where I was thinking about this film, this book, or actually it's supposed to be a much better book than the film, but I was thinking of the beach.
Right. But she blushes.
But she blushes when
she sees this group of people that run past, and they're like, you know, they're just completely naked. And then we get a new Spren.
Yes, we do. Hang on. I had something else underlined here. So, So they're leaping off, and then she's like, that wasn't so surprising. The waters of the Reshi Sea, like that of the Pure Lake, were warm. And then she says that she had once ventured into the water near her homeland,
right.
but it was a frigid experience and cold, and not one to be engaged in while of sound mind. That alcohol and bravado were involved where she comes from, but here,
right,
it's commonplace, and they're completely unclothed.
Actually, you know what? I'm glad that you brought that up because she's telling us right now, after the fact, how fucking cold it must have been for Shallan. Because she fell, her boat crashed near Thelena in those same waters she's talking about.
Right.
So she's literally letting us know, Shallan's okay now, but it was fucking cold. And Rizin's like, trust me, no one goes in there without bravado and lots of alcohol.
Right.
Yeah. So this is polar bearing. Yeah. They're definitely like, you know, this is totally what we do up in the north. Actually, I've never done polar bearing. That's fucking crazy. I would never do that. Would you ever do? Have you ever done that?
What?
Run into super cold water, like naked?
Oh, God,
and
no.
Who does that?
I mean, while people are saying it's good for you and it redirects blood flow or blah, blah, and good, you know, that very, you know, I might live to 1,000 years old if I did it, but guess what? I'm still not going to do it.
I can understand people doing it at like a spa and like the people are like, listen, you jump in the cold water, then you jump in the hot water and you go to the sauna and then you get a massage. Like I kind of get that. But if it's just like you and your three drunk buddies running into really cold water because you want to try to prove something, I'm not interested.
I'm the guy that takes like 3 hours to get into a lake. Okay. So I'm like the worst. I'm like the worst. I'm the tiptoey guy. Like, oh my God.
Ah. Jack, we got to go home now, dude. We've been at this for like 2.5 hours, bro. We got to go back.
Actually, the best way to get me into cold water is just to jump in. I just jump in and then it's done.
It's done.
But I remember many times trying to do the wade in and oh man, it was just torture.
It's never good. Yeah. Because as soon as the water gets to your nuts or whatever, like that's when it's over.
Oh yeah.
That's you just got to go right in.
And then, oh yeah. It's brutal. So no, I don't think I would be that kind of guy. But hey, you know what? Life's full of surprises. Mm-hmm.
I don't think Rizin is that kind of girl either.
I won't rule it out. So she's thinking, shouldn't they wear something?
Yeah.
And then shame Spren falls around her like white and red flower petals that drifted on a wind.
That's a really beautiful description of something that's like
shame
embarrassing, right? Like.
Yeah.
You're embarrassing and it looks beautiful around you. I guess it's kind of a...
Well, it may have a little bit of like innocence to it too, because she's looking at it like, I've never done that.
Right.
And maybe the shame Spren is kind of like, that's right. But, you know, maybe you should.
Right. Could you imagine like getting pantsed though? Like someone goes and like you're at school and like someone pantses you and then all of a sudden like white and red flower
shame
petals
Spren.
Start drifting on the wind around you? Like... You know what I mean?
Okay, maybe my theory doesn't
it's
work.
It's a little weird that Shame Spren's so lovely. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Someone pantses you. Okay. That's another thing we don't warn the newcomers about. So that's funny. I thought that was a well-placed little joke.
Mm-hmm.
And then she says, primitives, Rizin thought. She shouldn't blush so. She was an adult. Well, almost.
Right. Yeah, we don't really know how old she is.
No, I'm not sure if we do yet.
No.
So there's a low plate that is acting as a dock, and then Gu is bringing the flotilla as close as he can get it, and he says, "Up you go." And she's like, "Well, should we tie the boats to anything?" He says, "No, not safe with the movement. We'll pull back." And she says, "At night, how do you dock the boats? When we sleep, we move the boats away, tie them together." sleep out there. We'll find an island again in the morning.
Yeah.
So all of this is just so bizarre and new to her. She's
it's crazy,
just like,
yeah.
Oh, okay, that's how it works, eh? Okay. So she stands up. She says, or she's thinking, this was not going to be kind to her shoes, which had been quite expensive. She had a feeling that the Reshi wouldn't care. She could probably meet their king barefooted. Passions, from what she'd seen, she could probably meet him bare-chested.
Right.
So again, this is funny. She's, you know, she's concerned about the her frizzy hair
and
because of this bloody
and
mist.
Stuff and...
Yeah, like she's all concerned about like looking right. good for this transaction. And as it turns out, if you'd maybe waded in there with, you know, bare-chested and
yeah.
barefoot or what have you, it might have actually gotten a lot easier on
yeah,
her.
Yeah, it might have been, yeah, yeah. That's what I was saying. Like, these people don't give a fuck about her frizzy hair and nice shoes. Like, they don't care about that stuff.
Okay, so the shell was surprisingly not slippery. So I kind of, it's like the first time that I had pet a shark. This was a long time ago. And realized how sandy many of them were. And that surprised me. So it almost has, like, good grip when she's, like, stepping on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then she, I think it did. It, did Vistim wake up? I think
yeah,
he might have.
He's like he's not sleeping. He's kind of in and out of sleep. I think. It
okay.
says her Basque huddled inside, wrapped in his blanket, despite the heat, propped against mm-hmm. the back of the boat. His pale skin has a waxy, and so he's,
yeah,
he's awake, but he's not like together all
right.
Like he's not there. But we know that this is all just a ploy to make her go on her
right.
own, right? So,
right.
like, even
right.
you know, even if he
this.
Was pretending to be sleeping, like, even if he looked like he was sleeping, he might have been pretending, right?
Yeah.
So,
it's brilliant. I love yeah. it. She's like, Babs, we should turn around. Nonsense. I've suffered worse. The trade must happen. We've leveraged too much. I'll go to the island's king and traders, Risen says, and ask them to come here to negotiate with you on the docks. Nope. These people aren't like the Shin. My weakness will ruin the deal. Boldness. You must be bold with the Reshi. Bold, she says. Babsk, the Reshi are relaxed people. I don't think much matters to them. You will be surprised then, Vistim mm-hmm. says. Life can be simple here, yes. It attracts such people like war attracts painspren.
Mm-hmm.
One of the women scampered past. She had Thalen eyebrows. And then she notices another two that were probably her Daisian. And then did she see an Alethi? She's like, impossible.
This is where your
and then
whole,
Vistim says,
like, kind of like a hippie cult type thing makes
yeah.
sense because
well,
it's not just Reshi people. It's all these people
no.
from all, they want to live this lifestyle.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what really made me think about this kind of beach connection.
Mm-hmm.
People seek out this place, Vistim says. They like the life of the Reshi. Here, they can simply go with the island, fight when it fights another island, relax otherwise. There will be people like this in any culture, for every society is made of individuals. You must learn this.
Mm-hmm.
Do not let your assumptions about a culture block your ability to perceive the individual, or you will fail.
Right.
What a great bit of advice here.
It's
right?
true, yeah.
It's wonderful. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
If you cannot trade with them, Risen says, and he says, you must do it. How many times had she wished he would let her lead? Why is she now feeling so timid? This, again, it's just, with so many of these characters in this series, the reluctance to lead.
Right.
The reluctance to accept what you have. Almost even looking at what you have, your opportunity, as a bit of a curse.
Right. Right. She's really nervous, you know? And she's been waiting
nervous.
For a moment like this, and now that it's here, she's like, oh my God, what am I doing?
She's
why
like,
am I,
oh my God, what am I,
why am I so nervous? And
right, and she's literally going to him and saying, tell me what to do.
I like this
says,
bit of information here. Go ahead. They know much
well,
of foreigners?
Said,
yeah.
Yeah, like, I love this too. Vistim says, they know much of foreigners, more than we know of them. This is because so many of us come to live among them. Many of the Reshi are as carefree as you say, but there are also many who are not. Those prefer to fight, and a trade, it is like a fight to them. Well, it's like a fight to me too, she says. I know these people, Vistim says. We must have passion that Talik is not here. He is their best, and often goes to trade with other islands. Whichever you do meet for trade, he or she will judge you as they would judge a rival in battle. And to them, battle is about posturing. I once had the misfortune to be on the isle during war. He pauses and coughs. As the two islands rage, the people climb down onto boats to exchange insults and boasts. They would each start with their weakest, who would yell out boasts, and then progress in a kind of verbal duel up to their greatest. After that, arrows and spears, struggling on ships and in the water. Fortunately, there are more yelling. There was more yelling than actual cutting.
This is really, really cool.
What
here.
A fascinating like exchange, eh, between like how it works with these people.
Yeah, this is how the islands go to war. They
right.
like they start with insults, and the weakest go against the weakest, and then they like
right.
it's almost like a and tournament then, of it, insults it, and boasts.
It tears up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Really interesting. Vistam says, "You are not ready for this, child." "I know," she says. "Good. Finally, you realize it. Now go now. They will not suffer us long on their island unless we agree to join them permanently. Which would require, well, for one, it requires giving you, or giving all you own to their king."
So yeah, so all Lovely. These people who have come here to the Reshi Isle and live here have given yeah. all their possessions up to
Everything.
The king. Yeah. That's literally why they're running around with no clothes on. They don't own anything.
They've given it up just to be on this.
They've literally given
bloody...
up their skivvies to live here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But do they have enough alcoves?
I think they do.
I think it's
the Great
I
Shell has all kinds of built-in alcoves for all the Reshi sex.
They know. Okay. So,
so he says here that the
so
terms
to give away
of the negotiation have already been figured out.
Right.
So she's just going there to make sure the deal goes through, but they've already worked
through.
Out what's being traded.
Right. Convince them, he says. Passions guide you, child. Do well.
Yeah.
So off she goes with Kilrim and Nalent, I think is who is going with her. As they leave Vistim and they're walking on the dock-like protrusion.
Yeah.
And it was difficult now to see that the creature was not an island.
Mm-hmm.
Like now that they're close, so
and
it's
they're
like
on
from,
it?
From far away,
yeah.
like, oh, you see the leg and the, oh my gosh, this is a massive creature.
Mm-hmm.
The closer you got, it just, the perception changes completely.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, eh?
It is cool.
It's almost like, you know, the closer we get to these novels, our perception changes.
Oh, our perception changes. Well, let's keep peeling back the layers.
Yeah,
there.
She thinks here that if this trade goes badly, they could always sell the goods they brought to someone else, but they'd actually be out the cost of coming here. The expedition itself, coming here
right.
and hiring guides and all this stuff, costs a lot of money. So sure, they could sell all the goods some other place, but they'd literally be out of money, right?
Right, right. Yeah, that's true.
She has two guards with her, Kylerm
two
and
guards.
Then Nalent.
I like this. I like how there's a path and there's stairs, but they. She asks in commenting about them, they cut into the shell, and Kilrim says, "Chulls can't feel their shells.
Right.
This monster probably can't either. So they can literally." Manipulate the surface of this thing,
right?
And it doesn't feel it.
No,
and they can make it into what they
make
need.
Stairs,
so stairs
or yeah,
you know,
alcoves.
Whatever, a railing
yeah.
or yeah, an alcove. Yeah. as they walked, he kept. I guess this is Kilrim. He kept his hand on his gitet, a type of traditional Thalen sword. I like that a little
mm-hmm.
bit. A large triangular wedge of a blade with a grip directly at the base. And a bow on his back.
Yeah, it sounds like it's held. I have this in the info dump, but we can talk about it now.
Oh,
it sounds like it's held. He holds it in a fist like this, and the like the actual the hilt is held this way, and it comes out. And almost it's like almost like a punching dagger, but like a sword, like a punching
right.
sword.
Right.
It's really neat.
Yeah, it's cool. The pathway winds up through the thick jungle. And when the beast stepped, everything shook. So again, I love that. I like imagining or hearing this low sound,
right?
Like this low thump.
Yeah,
and just the trees sway, and the you know the larger plant life, like the larger leaves move, and you're just heading into this new environment. So again, it's just very, very visual.
Yeah, and they say later when the higher up they get on the back of this this creature, the less impactful the steps become. Like these tremors are
right.
very slight ones the higher up they get, right?
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
Again, bottom of page 209 in the paperback, vines trembled and twisted on the pathway or drooped from branches, and these pulled out of the way at her approach, but crept back quickly after her passing. I still say, without having met Brandon, Mr. Sanderson, again, with this idea of the plants reacting, as we've already seen before with the rock buds and others, I just can't help but feel like Brandon, Mr. Sanderson's a fan of the Dark Crystal. Because now, maybe in fiction it's been done, and that's where I'm won't have the experience. But certainly when I was a child and I saw the Dark Crystal in 1982, and when the plants were reacting to the environment, to the characters, like that blew my mind.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned it a couple episodes ago when Kaladin was practicing with Lopin Rock down in the chasms. Yeah.
How the plants react, dude. Yeah. Like it's just
maybe
it's
we'll
a
get to
thing,
ask Mr. Sanderson someday about that if we ever get to.
I would love to talk to
Wouldn't
him
that be
about
awesome?
all of his influences in terms of. You know, how he, you know, dreams up this wonderful place.
I love this moment here where she's, you know, looking out. She can see, there's like a clearing in the forest and she can see out and she sees like the endless blue waters, clouds dropping, a haze of rain and patches that seem so distant. And then she sees another island.
Another one? Yeah, I know. I was just like, when I was reading this for the first time, like you can imagine, like, I'm just dripping with excitement. Yeah, and she sees another one. And then Kildrum says, yeah, hopefully going the other way. I'd rather not be here when they decide to go to war. But again,
it almost sounds like a setup, like Risen's going to be here for a war between two islands, but it never happens. You know what I mean? Like,
no, well, it doesn't happen. Yeah, it doesn't happen in this particular interlude here. But but again, like you've already gone through the approach of the island, going from calm waters to, you know, these massive moving waters with each step of this creature, getting close, climbing on, meeting these reshi people, climbing up through the jungles, and then she gets another view of another
one, yeah,
on this journey up,
yeah. Like, and that's what you were just saying, like, you know, about perspective. She's literally on the top of one now, and now she can see one in the distance, and it doesn't look like a monster again from so far away, right? So, yeah, it's really cool.
Right. Yeah, it's so cool.
Okay, so there's this part here, Jack, that's coming up here. I want to, before we actually read the part, okay?
Yeah, sure.
I want to ask you, what do you think about this guy hung up, this guy strung up on this island here? What do you think about this?
Well, what I love about it is... is that the comment, it sort of seems, I love the reading of it. Like the way that this bit reads is wonderful because it's going from dialogue and then it just assumes that the dialogue is continuing, but it's not. It's someone has interjected here. And you get this line, they do it to shock you. They always jump from greater heights when a foreigner is here. And then Risen nods. But then she realizes that comment hadn't come from one of her guards.
Right.
So she turns over her left shoulder. The forest had moved back around a large outcrop of shell like a rock mound. And there, hanging upside down and tied by his feet to a point, is this lanky man with pale white skin verging on blue. He's wearing a loincloth.
I'm getting a feeling from you right now that you don't know who this is. You're
what
supposed
you
to know who this is. Let me read you the description, okay? Let me read it to you. Lanky man, pale white skin verging on blue, only wearing a loincloth, is covered in small intricate tattoos. He's got blue fingernails. This is our buddy, dude. This is the original Sprenhead. This is Axie's the Collector.
This is Axie's. Oh my God.
That's why he doesn't care about being hung up, strung up. He's maybe right. trying to look for a strung up Spren or something. Like, this right. is the guy.
This is the guy. Oh, this you is know our what? Dude. I don't think I put that together.
I had a feeling that you didn't, just because the way you spoke about him earlier in the pod, we mentioned him or whatever, and it felt like you didn't, like, this is him, man. Like,
that's,
it says,
that is him.
Yeah, it says,
pale white skin, yeah, verging blue, on blue.
Blue fingernails and deep blue eyes that could have been, should have been a clue. Risen stepped back, though she couldn't see his Voidbringer shadow. Remember, Amien's right. shadows reflect in the opposite direction. They don't
opposite
reflect away.
Direction.
Yeah, away from the sun. Right. They reflect towards it.
Which is so crazy.
So
cool.
strange. But she equates it to Voidbringers for some reason. All weird things in this world are given to the Voidbringers, right?
Yeah, let's blame it on the Voidbringers. Yeah. Blame it on the Voidbringers.
Yeah, yeah. That's we should have lip synced that one, actually.
Keep your distance. This is the Collector. That's great. Okay, that's great. Because I don't think I made that connection because it was so slight, and then it gets on to other things because it runs through the tiniest
of cameos.
Right. And there he is.
Yeah.
On this great shell, hanging out with the Reshi upside down. Well, he came here
for a reason. He came, Axies isn't doing stuff for no reason. He's coming here for a reason.
Right.
And the whole thing is he's trying to collect the names of Sprens and he's trying to find all the Sprens, right?
Right.
It says, she asks him, are you well? And then she's like, between blackouts? Yes.
Yes.
Quite well. I think I'm growing numb to the pain of my ankles, which is just delightful. Which is hilarious.
I've had a slight improvement because I'm no longer feeling the pain in my ankles.
Right.
So I decided improvement from, yesterday.
For sure.
I had all the ankle pain you can possibly muster, but today, things are looking up for me. Hanging upside down in the loincloth on this great shelf.
Yeah, it gets back to him. Like, he's literally getting plastered to see if there's hungover Spren, right? Like, he's just putting himself through it just to see. I like here, she's like, she says that Risen brought her hand up to her chest, not daring to get any closer. Amien, very bad luck. And I wanted to kind of make a parallel here because we've heard of the Irali, which was in one of the last interludes we just did. The Irali are known that for their golden hair, and a lock of their hair is supposed to be good luck. Whereas being even in the presence of an Amien is bad luck. So there's just really weird ideas, all these weird superstitions that exist here, right?
Well, and even says here that she wasn't particularly superstitious.
No.
She was even skeptical of the passion sometimes, but, well, this was an Amien.
Right. Right. So, you got to take it seriously.
Borderlines on don't want to take any chances here.
Right.
Right?
That's
funny.
So the guard's like, what fell curses did you bring on this people, on the Reshis, right?
And he calls him a beast.
Yeah.
He says beast.
Yeah, he calls him a beast. Like, he's not even human.
Not even human.
Right.
Improper puns, the man said lazily, and a stench from something I ate that did not sit well with me. Are you off to speak with the king, then? It's so funny.
Yeah.
Risen, yes. Well, the creature says, I love this.
Right.
So, like Brandon Sanderson playing along, you know.
Right, exactly, like he's taking their side.
Well, the creature says, don't ask about the soul of their god. They don't like to speak of that, it turns out. Must be spectacular to let the beasts grow this large, beyond even the Spren who inhabit the bodies of ordinary great shells.
These two sentences is clear evidence that it's him, because he's interested in the soul of the great shell of this animal. It's the Spren he's looking for. He's looking for the Spren that lives inside this monster island thing, right? Like...
I want to find the biggest Spren I can possibly find.
Right.
It's rumored to be among the Reshi. They're living on one.
Right.
What?
Off
I go.
Yeah, he must have went right away, right?
where's my loincloth?
Well, he went to that town to go see the water Spren. Remember that huge water Spren that crashes the waves, into the city or the wall, the docks?
That was, I think, the first time that I had experienced like something other than what
other
I
than regular emotion Spren or consequence like, Spren or something. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because at the time you didn't know that Syl was...
Which blew my mind.
Right, right. You didn't know that Syl was something different than Windspren. You just thought she was Windspren.
Yep.
Yeah, so this... Yep.
And then, of course, when you meet this collector for the first... And then you see that there are these larger Spren, and then, of course, to Shadesmar and the building. Right.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah, and it expands out from there, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if Axes has ever been to Shadesmar. He'd probably poop his pants. He'd have poop. He had dunk Spren, probably.
He must know of it.
I mean,
how could you? How could you not? Unless that is she, okay. Now maybe that's a point that I'm not quite so clear. I mean, I know that Yasna was well aware of Shadesmar.
She had the ability to travel there, though.
Right.
So maybe.
But is that knowledge? Is that knowledge amongst other Vristatalian?
So.
Is that knowledge? Well, Dalinar. Yeah, Dalinar now knows about it.
Doesn't know about Shadesmar.
The only person other than Yasna and Shallan is Kaladin.
Because Syl says to him Shadesmar, where my where the cities and stuff. So she tells him there's a place, but no one else really knows. So Axes, it's very possible he has no fucking clue.
There's cities of Spren.
Yeah, he might not have any clue.
Yeah, that's gonna blow his mind. he'll be like, oh, I can drown amongst these Spren, no problem.
I wish that we could record a live read with Axes the Collector where we read to him the part with the Spren cities, and he's all like, we can catch it live.
Get his reaction.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah.
Buddy, you are not gonna believe you think you like Spren now? Guess what? They've got cities, dude.
Dude, there's like a Coachella of Spren. It's crazy.
Burning Man. It's Burning Spren. It's the Burning Spren.
Yeah, so this part is really funny.
So the Great Shells, and he's saying, and then Kilrim says, do not feel for him, Trade Master. He could escape if he wished.
Right.
Lent, the other guard, says, they can take off their limbs, take off their skin, too. It's no real body to them. Just something evil taking human form. Isn't that interesting?
We knew that he has, from the last interlude with him in it, we know that he has body manipulation because he was able to take care of his own headache whenever he wanted to.
Right.
He was able to kind of like mold his body in a way. That's how he makes the tattoos. He doesn't actually get tattooed.
Right.
He just makes them appear, right? So this guard is saying that he can take off his limbs, take off their skin too, no real body to them. This feels
like
what non-Amians know about Amians, not necessarily what they can do. Does that make sense? This feels like it's
absolutely
a rumor.
This is garbledygook. I mean, it says right after it that he clutches his charm of courage tightly in one hand as he's saying this. You know, he's spooked out.
Mm-hmm.
So it has all the trappings of him completely getting all this wrong.
Right. Yeah, but they leave him like pretty quickly. Like they don't dwell on him, and I really wish they would have dwelled on him, but they don't. Yeah.
Kilrim. So this is a note here from a thought rather from, from Risen. Kilrim called me Trade Master.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't, not yet. She was property owned by Vistim. For now, just an apprentice who provided occasional slave labor.
Right.
She didn't deserve the title, but hearing it strengthened her. Again, I just want to like say that once again, we're drawing connections to where you're at, titles, power, opportunity being given to you, and many, not all, but several of these characters are reluctant to run with the ball, so to speak, which I think is really interesting.
And for sure she is also... She's just a side character, but she's got some ties to Kaladin and to Shallan, you know, an apprentice. Kaladin was owned. He was a slave. She says a slave labor. She's owned by Vistim, even though it's more of a apprenticeship understanding. But they are using the word slave, so she is owned right. by him. So right. there she definitely has some ties there with some of the other characters, which is really interesting.
Okay, so they keep, so her legs, I love the description of this too, like, again, going through this jungle, going higher and higher, her clothing getting damp with sweat. The head of this creature, Risen thought, we've climbed all the way to the beast's head.
Yeah.
And when she emerges from this top, soldiers now line the path, armed with spears, bearing colorful tassels, their breastplates and arm guards were of carapace carved wickedly with points. And though they wore only wraps for clothing, they stood as stiff-backed as any Alethi soldier. I like this, too, that just in the language there, just, you know, equating to the Alethi. Like, you know, these, not better than,
no.
equal to.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And she's thinking to herself.
It's like they have, sort of they have their own discipline.
Like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Just because they're primitive, because she calls them primitive earlier, right?
Yeah.
Just because she calls them primitive doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have discipline and honor and all that stuff. So.
Right, right.
Which we know from the Parshendi too, right? Just because they're savages doesn't mean that they don't have honor.
Right? Yeah, right. Boldness, she keeps thinking to her. So she's remembering her Babsk's advice. Mm-hmm. Vistam's advice, be bold. So boldness. The king stood at the end of the pathway of guards and rock buds, a diminutive figure on the edge of the carapace shelf, looking toward the sun. The man wore full, voluminous robes of vibrant green and yellow. And as she drew near, Risen got a sense for just how high she had climbed. I love this. Mm-hmm. Again, just the sense of how high you are in terms of changing your perspective. The waters below shimmered in the sunlight, so far down that Risen wouldn't have heard a rock hit if she'd dropped one.
Right.
Far enough that looking over the side made her stomach twist upon itself and her legs tremble.
It's making my stomach twist. I hate
it. I know, just thinking about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, well, that's what I love about this whole climb is just that it's just so interesting that you get to see, you know, like, I imagine these Reshi, like, almost... Like these, they're kind of following them along at different points, mm-hmm. you know, jumping and doing their gymnastics or their bravado, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then coming upon the Amian.
Right.
You know, just having this like this odd, strange little encounter.
Right.
And then continuing to have her perspective changed and then arriving at the top and then looking out and seeing this king. It says here, she was not the ignorant girl who had misjudged the Shin or who had offended the Iriali. She had learned. Still, perhaps, she should have asked Lent to lend her his charm of courage.
Right.
And so there's a little bit, there's like a little bit of like, well, maybe I should play it safe.
Yeah,
you know what?
Yeah.
I kind of want that rabbit's foot. Like I'm
right.
feeling a little overwhelmed.
I might need it. Yeah.
Yeah. So the king turned, and it was a woman.
Right.
Old enough that her hair was graying, but not so old that she was bent with age. Someone stepped out onto the shelf behind Risen. Younger, he wore the standard wrap and tassels. He speaks up and says to her, "The king wishes to know why his old trading partner Vistam has not come in person, and has instead sent a child in his place." "And are you the king?" Risen asks. "You stand beside him, yet ask that of me?" I love this. Little tense.
Yeah.
"We are led by a king," the newcomer said. "Gender is irrelevant."
I like this. They like the title of king. Queen doesn't
fit
for them. They like king.
Queen doesn't work for them.
Yeah. Yeah, queen doesn't work for them. They like king no matter who is in charge.
Right.
I like that a lot. I think that's really cool.
It is cool. "My master is indisposed," she says. "I am authorized to speak for him and to accomplish the trade." He should have known better. "The trade is off then. You are Talik, I assume." Risen says.
Yeah, she realizes now, because Vistam earlier said, hopefully you don't run into Talik. Hopefully he's off Talik on another trade somewhere.
Because he's hardcore.
Do you think when Vistam says that to her, hopefully you don't run into Talik, he must know Talik's up there? Because this is all figured out.
I wondered that as well. Like, I don't know if he knew it was going to happen or not. I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't know.
You're right. There's no way of knowing, right?
He might have known and then just said it, like, well, I hope you don't get him. And then, of course, you do.
You do get him, yeah. you should have been ready to get him.
Maybe it's the adversity that you encounter over and over again.
Right.
So whether it's being intimidated and now you're up against Talik, maybe that's what sort of spurs you to boldness.
Maybe.
So maybe it's that journey again that is what is required.
He might have wanted to make her nervous about having to face Talik. And then when she did, to see really how well she does when being told ahead of time, this is one of their best dealers. So hopefully it's not him kind of thing.
So he says, yes, my master warned me about you. Then he isn't a complete fool, Talik says, just mostly. Mm-hmm. Risen, she clenches her teeth at this and then forced herself to sit down beside him on the edge. Nearby, standing on a ridge above the eye to Risen's right, people pushed large bundles of fruit off the side, tied with vine rope. The bundles swung down beside the maw below. Like this for me, what a great visual. Just
this
like
is really
feeding,
cool.
Feeding the god, feeding the great shell that exists.
Right.
I just absolutely love this. Mandibles moving slowly, pulling the fruit in, jerking the ropes. I wish there was a bit of a description, or maybe there is, of the beast, like, you know, crunching and you know.
Well, they don't even know because it's just so far down.
It's so, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, you could throw a rock and not
right.
hear it, right?
Just
completely lost. Talik says, a treat, an offering. These small bundles of fruit, of course, do not sustain our god. What does, she says. Why are you still here, young one? Did I not dismiss you? The trade does not have to be off, Risen says. My master told me the terms were already set. We have brought everything you require in payment. Though for what, I don't know, she says. Or thinks she's thinking internally. Turning me aside would be pointless. Mm-hmm. It would serve the same purpose as everything in life, Talik says, to please Reluna. And your island would approve of such waste, inviting traders all this way, only to send them off empty-handed. Mm-hmm. Reluna approves of boldness, Talik says. So he repeats it.
So this is the name of the beast that they live on, is Reluna.
Right.
Taina is the type of beast it is. Like, so they call those gigantic chasm fiends, or they call the gigantic great shells chasm fiends over in the Shattered Plains. These ones are referred to as Taina, and this one is specifically named Reluna, which is really cool.
And more importantly, he says, respect. If we do not respect the one with whom we trade, then we should not do it. What ridiculous logic, she thinks.
Yeah.
If a merchant followed that line of reasoning, he'd never be able to trade. Except in her months with Vistam, it seemed that she'd often sought out people who liked trading with him. People he respected. Those kinds of people certainly would be less likely to cheat you. Perhaps it wasn't bad logic, simply incomplete.
So even as she's expected to do this big deal, she's learning how to do it as she's doing it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? She's like, wait a minute, I have to see his side. And that's when she says it to herself here. She's like, think like the other trader. What do they want? Why do they want it? And why are you the best one to provide it? Now, even though this is really great thinking here, it backfires on her big time, because she like almost insults them with, she's like, you know, I have medicine, you know, you need the things I have because you can't make them yourself. And it's, he takes it almost like an insult.
Yeah. It's cool. And her reasoning is so smooth. It must be hard to live out here in the waters.
Yeah.
Your God is impressive, but you cannot make everything you need for yourselves. our ancestors did it just fine. Without medicines? Risen says that could have saved lives without cloth from fibers that grow only on the mainland? Your ancestors survived without these things because they had to. You do not. We are not idiots, Talik says.
Yeah, this is where she realizes she made a misstep here, yeah.
She says, he says, I'm so tired of explaining this. We live simply. That does not make us stupid. For years, the outsiders came, trying to exploit us because of our ignorance. We are tired of it, woman. Everything you say is true. Not true, obvious. Yet you say it as if we'd never stopped to consider. Oh, medicine. Of course we need medicine. Thank you for pointing that out. I was just going to sit here and die. Risen, yeah. Risen blushed. I didn't... Yes, you did mean that, Talik says.
Right.
Condescension dripped from your lips, young lady. We're tired of being taken advantage of. We're tired of foreigners who try to trade us trash for riches. We don't have knowledge of the current economic situation on the mainland, so we can't know for certain if we are being cheated or not. Therefore, we trade only with people we know and trust. That is that.
So, upon first reading this, it sounds really like she put her foot in her mouth, she misstepped, she assumed stuff about this culture that she shouldn't have, and he's making her pay by saying, you know, we're not stupid. You're making us, like, you're condescending to us. But we know this is all a setup. So I don't think he really believes this stuff. He's pushing back on her on purpose to challenge her skills because we find out at the end of this, not to skip ahead, but we find out that Talik studied under Vistam.
Yeah.
Vistan was his Bapsk too, right? So he's doing the things that he learned from Vistan back to Risen, you know? So it's funny because I feel bad for her in this moment, but also realize that this is all purposefully done.
He's trying to see how far she will go.
Right, right, exactly. And that's
so
that's
he's
important.
Trying to bring out, he's trying to bring it out of her too.
Right. Because this isn't, at the heart of it, this isn't a deal. This is just another lesson. It might be a harsh one, right? And we'll find out how harsh at the end. Mm-hmm. We already know because we've read it, but we find out how harsh it is at the end, the lesson. So I wonder if this is as harsh of a lesson as Shallan went through in the alleyway. I mean, it was, you know,
with Yasna?
Yeah, like this is a complete setup. Yeah, they're completely the king, the Talik, Vistam, they're all setting her up here.
Yeah.
Really to fail. And she ends up, we'll talk about it later, but she ends up having two broken legs at the end of it because of it. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. Was it worth it? I'm not sure.
I think we could talk about what she did and whether or not it was of sound mind or not. But
right.
You've trained in Thelena, or in Thelena, she guesses. Of course I have, he says. You have to know a predator's tricks before you can catch him. My parents sent me to train as a child. I had one of your Babsks. I made Trade Master on my own before returning here. Your parents being the king and queen? He eyes her. The king and king's consort.
Right. So that's what his dad's name, that's what his dad's title is. The king's consort. Right.
You could just call her a queen. This trade is not happening. Go and tell your master we are sorry for his illness and hope that he recovers. If he does, he may return next year during the trading season and we will meet with him. Mm-hmm. You imply you respect him, so just trade with him. He is sickly, Talik says. It would not do him justice. We'd be taking advantage of him. You'd trade with me if you respected me, Risen says. If you thought I was worthy of it. That will take years, Talik says. Go away. And he trails off here, and Risen says, what? Because he cuts off as the king spoke to him softly in Reshi.
Right.
Talik draws his lips to a line, and he's like, what? Talik turns toward her and says, you have apparently impressed the king. You argue fiercely, though you dismiss us as primitive. You're not as bad as some. The king will hear your argument for a trade.
So she's done enough in this little back and forth.
To get the king's attention.
Okay, so I want to show a parallel here between what's just happened and what they talked about earlier about how islands war against each other. Lower right. level people go against each other with insults and boasts.
Right.
And if they can best that person, then they can go to the next level and get the next person up. So right. she had to do this with Talik. She had to match wits with Talik.
Yep.
And she did well enough to now be able to go match wits with the king.
Right.
So it's very, very like hierarchical it's very, like that.
It's yeah. And in terms of the boasting too, I mean, it was being done. I'm not so sure if it was being done by Rizin, although you could say that just her wanting to climb, like to get onto this island, to be bold enough to do that, mm-hmm. and then trekking through the jungles and climbing. Because I'm kind of imagining those boasts being the Reshi again, you know, jumping off from higher levels, showing what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you surpass that and keep going, so now you've gained another audience to a higher echelon.
Right.
Of,
right. That's the point, right? Is that you just keep right. climbing that ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And so now she's on to the king. Now she's actually able to talk to the king through a translator, right. obviously. But she's past level one. She's on to level two now.
She says, internally, she thinks, I've won the first fight. Rizin right. has realized. Talik says, the king says that you are talented, but that the trade cannot, of course, continue. You should return with your Babsk when he comes again in a decade or so before perhaps we will trade with you. A decade or so, he says.
Right.
So Rizim searches for an argument. And is that how Vistim gained respect, Your Majesty? Over years with his own Babsk? Yes, Talik said. You yeah. didn't interpret that, Rizin said. And Talik trails off here. The king smiled with apparent fondness. She spoke a few words in their language, and Talik turned to his mother, looking shocked. Wow. What? Rizin demanded. Your Babsk slew a Korakot with some of our hunters. On his own? A foreigner? I had not heard of such a thing. And then she's thinking, Vistim slaying something with hunters? That's impossible. Though he obviously hadn't always been the wizened old ledgerworm that he is now. The king speaks again. I doubt you'll be slaying any beast, child, Talik interprets. Go. Your Babsk will recover from this. He is wise. She thinks he is dying. It came yeah. to her mind, unbidden, but the truth of it terrified her. More than the height, more than anything she'd ever known, Vistim was dying. This might be his final trade. I really like this.
Yeah.
That despite all of the adversity that she's already gone through, that, like, losing her Babsk,
mm-hmm.
that's the most terrifying thing in this experience.
Right. And she's really worried that his last deal will be, she's going to ruin it. She's going to ruin his right. last deal.
Right.
And, like, he's got this track record of making all these great deals, and it's, for these merchants, that's probably more important than life or death.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, I like this. It's like tarnishing, it's like playing with an amazing a sports player and tarnishing their legacy because you shit the bed with them or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I can't be so, the reason why.
So he turns her away yet again, and she comes back and she says, my Babsk trusts me. And you said you trust him. Can you not trust his judgment that I am worthy? One cannot substitute for personal experience, Talik translates. The beast stepped ground trembling. Rizin stepped closer to where the king stands. So she goes closer.
Yeah.
Right?
She approaches.
Takes a step. You are king. You know the importance of trusting those beneath you. You cannot be everywhere, know everything. At times you must accept the judgment of those you know. My Babsk is such a man. You make a valid point, Talik says. Talik translates.
Right.
But what you do not realize is that I have already paid your Babsk this respect. That is why I agreed to speak with you myself. I would not have done this for another. But return below, the king says, through Talik.
Right.
Tell your Babsk that you proceeded far enough to speak with me personally. Doubtless this is more than he expected. You may leave the island and return when he is well. Do you not also see that this is kind of like the number of times it took Kaladin to get anywhere with Bridge 4. Remember
sort
how
of, yeah.
how we used to talk about how you get hit again, you're told, you know, like you just how much more arduous could this process
be? You have to keep coming back and keep coming back.
And she keeps getting slammed in this
right.
in this trade.
And her ability to continue on and keep going in the face of being told no is the boldness that she needs.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You can't take no for an answer, and this is literally that in practice.
Well, and she's getting defeated here because in the text to that answer, so you may leave the island and return when he is well.
Right.
She says, I and she can't even get the words out, and then the king says, give him my best wishes for his recovery. Yeah. So again, she's slammed again.
Right.
Risen steps away. She feels numb. Turned away like a child demanding sweets. Risen stops. She looked to her left at the endless expanse of blue. She turned back toward the king.
This is incredible.
I believe, Risen said loudly. I believe that I need to speak with someone with more authority. Talak turned toward her. You have spoken to the king. There is nobody with more authority. I beg your pardon, Risen said, but I do think there is. One of the ropes shook from having its fruit gift consumed. This is stupid, this is stupid, this is stupid, this is stupid. Don't think. I love that.
This is amazing, dude.
She grabbed the length of rope and let herself over the side, climbing down beside the great shell head.
The god's head.
The god's head.
So this is like, remember how we talked earlier about, you remember you mentioned earlier in the pod about how this is like that moment with Shallan and the Santhid, but this thing is enormous compared to the Santhid.
It's enormous compared.
Well, this is like the same thing because she's hanging, dangling by its eye now.
Right, right.
And it's just like, you know, there's a world of difference between these two creatures, but it's really cool that they're both suspended by these creatures. So drawing another parallel between Risen and Shallan.
I like Talak's response here. What in Kellek's name are you doing, idiot woman?
Yeah. And Risen found it amusing that he'd learned their curses, because we know about the curses and Kellek and Yezrian and all that stuff.
Reluna, she yelled back at Talak, approves of boldness. There is a difference between boldness and stupidity.
So, dude, this is the moment when this plan that Talak, the king, and Vistam had to teach her a lesson has backfired. Now they're like, holy shit, she took it too seriously.
she's taking it too far. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about briefly. What do you think? Do you think she took it too far, or did she take it exactly where it needed to go?
I think that...
To get this deal done.
I think that she took it too far because she got gravely injured. However, she does get rewarded with something at the end. Yeah. And so I think it might end up being worth it.
Risen continued to climb down. It was more of a slide. Oh, craving, passion of need. Pull her back up, Talak orders. You, soldiers, help. Risen looked up at the workers, grabbed the rope to haul her back upward. A new face appeared above, however, looking down. It was the king. She raised a hand, halting them, as she studied Risen. Risen continued on down. She didn't go terribly far, maybe 50 feet or so, not even down to the creature's eye. She stopped herself with effort, but her fingers were burning. Yeah. Oh, great Reluna, Risen said loudly, your people refuse to trade with me, and so I come to you to beg. Your people need what I have brought, but I need a trade even more. I cannot afford to return. Please, Risen said. Please.
Yeah.
The creature does not reply.
She thinks to herself, what am I expecting to happen? Like, what, like, is the island going to be like, yes? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what's she expecting to happen?
Oh, okay. Sounds pretty good. Right?
We'll take your medicine. You know what I mean?
Okay, buddy. But maybe she could persuade those above that she was bold enough to be worthy. It couldn't hurt, at least.
Yeah.
Actually, what she was doing could hurt very much.
Mm-hmm.
The king, Talak says from above, has commanded that you return. Will our negotiation continue? She asks. That's not important. I love Talak. That's funny. That's not important. Yeah. You have been issued a command. Risen grits her teeth, looking at the plates of chitin before her. And what do you think? She asks softly.
Yeah, she's asking down, the island that. She's asking Reluna that.
And what do you think? Down below, the thing bit down, and the rope suddenly became very tight, slapping Risen against the side of the enormous head. Above, workers shouted. The king yelled at them in a sudden, sharp voice. Oh, no. The rope pulled even tighter and then snapped. The shouts grew frantic above. Though Risen barely noticed them as panic struck, she did not fall gracefully. But as a flurry of screaming cloth and legs, her skirt flapping, her stomach lurching, what had she done? She saw an eye, the god's eye. Only a glimpse as she passed. It was as large as a house, glassy and black, and it reflected her falling form. She seemed to hang before it for a fraction of a second, and her scream died in her throat. It was gone in a moment. Then, rushing wind, another scream, and a crash into water, hard as stone. Blackness. And then we get a change of view here.
Yeah, so there's like, that moment there where she's like kind of like so suspended. She's suspended by the eye, like Shallan was with the Santhin, right?
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
So Risen finds herself floating when she awakens. She's an idiot. She knew that voice.
Yeah.
It was Talik. Vistim says, well, then she fits well with me. I have to say, old friend, you were supposed to help train her, not drop her off a cliff. Risen is forcing her eyes open. She's in bed inside a little hut. She had a vision that she was swimming, that she drifted. Drifted because her mind was cloudy.
Right.
What had they given her? Her legs wouldn't move. Vistim's face appeared above her. Calm now, Vistim says. Calm. They'll get you something to drink, child. I lived. So that, for me, I want to talk about that. That is impressive.
That she lived?
Surprised. She vocalizes that. She's like, I lived.
Yeah.
Almost like she knew she might not.
Right. There's a reason why she lived, too. They explain it in a little bit. How she survived.
I lived, barely, Vistim says. The Spren cushioned your fall from that height. Child, what were you thinking, climbing over the side like that?
The Spren. The Spren cushioned your fall.
Yeah. I know. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
I needed to do something, Risen said, to prove courage. I thought I needed to be bold. I like that too, to prove courage. She was thinking that she might have needed some kind of a token to rub or something.
Right.
But she had it all along.
Right, she had it inside.
It wasn't some bauble that she needed.
No, for sure not.
But courage, they say, it couldn't come at a worse time. I've heard that somewhere.
Oh.
I don't know where.
Courage!
I don't know.
So good.
So good.
He says, oh child, this is my fault.
Right.
Says, and then she realizes, you were his, Babsk.
Right.
Talik, their traitor. You set this up with him so I could have a chance to trade on my own, but in a controlled setting. The trade was never in danger, and you were not as sick as you appear. The words boiled out, tumbling over one another like 100 men trying to leave through the same doorway at once. She clues in. She's like, oh my God, I am an idiot, right? She thinks, man, this was a setup.
When did you figure that out? Vistim says. Right now? Well, you must know that I feel a true fool, Vistim says. I thought this would be a perfect chance for you, a practice with real stakes. And then you went and fell off the island's head. Will I walk again? Risen says. Here, drink this. Will I walk again? I don't know, Vistim said. But you will trade again.
Right.
Patience.
Which is even more important,
authority.
Dude. Sorry. That's even more important. Walking?
Right. You will.
We get to trade again.
But trading, we get to trade again.
Right.
Daring to go above the king's authority? Being saved by the island's soul itself? He chuckles. The other islands will be clamoring to trade with us.
That's awesome.
Then I accomplish something, she says. Oh, you accomplish something indeed. She felt a prickling pressure on her arm and opened her eyes with a snap. Something crawled there, about as big as the palm of her hand, a creature that looked like a kremlin, but with wings that folded along the back. What is it? Risen demanded. why we came here.
Mm-hmm.
The thing we trade for it, a treasure that very few know still exists. We were supposed to have died with Amia. You see, I came here with all of these goods in tow because Talik sent me. Sent to me to say that they had the corpse of one to trade. Kings pay fortunes for them. He leaned down.
They pay fortunes for a dead one.
Right. I have never seen one alive before. I was given the corpse I wanted in trade. This one has been given to you. By the Reshi? The Reshi could not command one of the Larkin.
The Larkin.
He says. This was given you by the island itself. Now drink your medicine and sleep. You shattered both of your legs. We will be staying on this island for a long while as you recover, and as I seek forgiveness for being a foolish, foolish man. She accepted the drink. As she drank, the small creature flew up toward the rafters of the hut and perched there, looking down at her with eyes of solid silver.
Cool. So this whole thing results in her getting one tiny insect-like creature.
Yeah.
Given to her by the god Reluna.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't it cool?
It's cool.
There's the whole reason for this chapter is not that, but that's what they get at the end. When you ask me, is it worth it? I don't know, man. We don't know if it's going to be worth it, if she's never going to be able to walk again, but she will trade again, like Vistam says.
She will trade
again. And she got something that is even, if a dead one is worth King's fortune, what is this thing when it's alive?
Well, this one is alive.
That's what I mean. What is it then?
So,
if it's worth so much dead, what is it? It's so interesting. It's so cool.
Did it say the size of it? It says
it's the size of a Kremlin. It's like the size of a prawn.
Like the span of her hand, sort of.
Yeah, like it's just a tiny little creature, and it's got little wings that fold in the back, so it looks like a Kremlin with wings. I'm sure when we get to this part, I'll post some fan art. There's some fan art.
We might be getting our Jiminy Cricket here.
Oh, look at you. That's awesome. That's awesome.
We could be getting, what was he, Conscience? I wonder if there'll be any kind of connection there. We'll see.
Maybe. We'll see. We'll have to see. Yeah, we'll have to see.
I don't know.
So great interlude. A very long one.
Great interlude. But highlight for me, I mean, I don't know. Where do you begin? The great shell itself, the perspective, the journey up, the echelon of struggle, her insistence, her bravado, her courage, leaping out, waking up, and she's like almost half surprised. I lived?
Right.
Like, where do you pick amongst all those highlights? I don't know. Mm. Amy and hanging upside down.
He's back.
The soul of the island cushioning her fall.
Right. Yeah, that's
like,
huge.
Where do you begin?
The soul of this island saved her life. That's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I think if I have to pick, like, when I made my notes, the highlight for me was Axes the Collector. Axes is back.
Axes,
I love
this
quirky, weird character.
Yeah.
I'm so interested in Amia and what happened there and why they're all dead. Yeah. Why are they regarded as beasts and creatures and all this stuff? I just so curious.
Well, you heard of these special abilities they have.
Right.
They have just evil inside. Mm-hmm. They're not human.
Right. Yeah. Like, I just, wow. But I mean, we know that the humans, technically, I guess, Amian is probably not human, but the humans see anything that's different from them as some kind of, you know, Voidbringer, right? Like we said that earlier, that all the things that are different are void from the Voidbringers, right?
Right.
But so just to get back to the point, Axes was my highlight when I did the research. But then in doing this recording this pod with you, I think perspective has become my highlight. This whole thing where she saw the island, it was an island. She got closer.
Right.
It was no longer an island. It was a monster. And then when she got on it, she saw that it wasn't a monster anymore. It was an island again. And then she saw those trees part and could see another island in the distance. And from this far away, it was just an island again. So it's really, really thematic and really cool.
It's really cool that in terms of the perspective, her perspective was that, you know, Talik was the one that you weren't supposed to get or you were hoping not to get. And he was only one step. Then there was the king and their authority. So that's another perspective. And when she's up there, she realizes, you know what? If I'm not going to get anywhere with the king,
right?
My perspective has changed once again. Who's really in charge here? It's the great shell that we're all currently climbing on.
Right.
Let's all get some perspective here. Yeah. Without this creature, there isn't any. There are no reshi.
No, it's an iconic moment, dude. When she's like, "I'm gonna have to go over your head on this. I'm gonna have to speak with someone with more authority." You just talked to the king. There is no one with more authority. Actually,
If I had to rename it, what's the title of this one again?
Risen.
Last Legion is next. Yeah, that was Risen. Okay, Risen's a great title, but if I had to pick, even though it's a little on the obscure side, I would have picked I Lived.
Yeah, that's pretty great. That's pretty great.
I love that's part of like her waking up and that's her thought.
Yeah.
That, I mean, again, I cannot believe that these little bits, these are interludes. Yeah. These could easily have been expanded on
their
and written
own stories.
Oh yeah.
But it's so wonderful how he does it because there are main characters that we want to get back to. Mm-hmm. And then he puts these like tiny little characters that we don't even know if we're going to get back to them eventually. Mm-hmm. Like, look, we had a whole chapter with Ishik. We don't know what happened to Ishik.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That's right.
The point of Ishik's interlude wasn't Ishik that was the point. It was the people who were looking for Hoyd that was the point.
Right.
Right. For Hoyd, so these and Yim, we just read Yim last episode. Mm-hmm. Yim wasn't the point of that interlude. It was the man who killed Yim was the point, right?
Right.
The man in black and silver with the crescent scar on his cheek. So these interludes are tricky because don't get too attached to these characters because they might not be around, right? So, yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's wonderful.
So great.
Yeah. You know what else is so great? The info dump.
An info?
Yeah.
Of the dump variety.
It's a segue.
Dump spren.
I have a lot of stuff here,
and there's dump spren.
Right. Yeah. I have a lot of stuff here, but most of it was covered. So let me just quickly go through it in case we didn't. The Reshi seas were deeper than the Pure Lake. We read that. And it had trees growing out of the sea that are like this, and its stone are made of like stone. Its bark is made of stone.
Yes.
And it could break the hulls of ships.
Right.
It's really crazy. Risen's guide called them Ina, which she thinks means bad, which is really, really interesting. These, you know, I almost feel like they're like stalagmites sticking out, but they're actual trees or something like.
Yeah, just, you know, bulge. I mean, it's akin to, you know, sharp rocks that you have to navigate through. But again, with the way that they were traveling, it would have seemed to her like so precarious.
Yeah.
That they were able to do it with such accuracy and. Mm-hmm. You know, as if it was nothing.
It's just so cool. So the water in the Reshi Seas were warm like the Pure Lakes. And Thalens will sometimes venture into the water near their homeland. We heard that earlier. Risen said that, you know, this is awesome. The water here is beautiful, but we, you know, Thalens very rarely go into their in the waters because it's so cold, like polar bear.
Right.
We had talked about this already.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We talked about the Reshi Wars and how it's all about trading insults and boasts. And sometimes they will start to go with spear and dagger, but mostly it's just yelling at each other and calling each other snakes and bitches and all that kind of stuff. Mm. We did talk about how it's a hierarchy of duels. So you start with the weakest and you move up the line, and that's really, really interesting. I love that so much.
Yeah, yeah.
We covered the Getet, which is the traditional Thalen sword. It's a large triangle wedge that goes over top of the fist. Yeah. So you don't hold it.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't hold it like a traditional sword where you're holding it and the pommel is vertical in your hand and the sword goes vertical above your fist. This is, you hold it like a punching dagger almost, but it comes all the way out. So you're swiping in different ways, which is really cool. I just love when swords and weaponry are used in innovative ways. It's really cool.
I think there's another weapon that is similar to that exists in real life too. But I couldn't recall the name of it. I'd have to look
Think
at
D&D. It's called like a
sea. I don't think it's from D&D.
No, but there's one. There's some in D&D too that are similar to that. And then the last point I have here is that the Resi soldiers were armed with spear with colorful tassels on them. They wore breastplates and arm guards carved from the carapace. So they sort of have a Parshendi look to them. The carapace have these like wicked points on them, which is really, really
neat. A little more menacing. Yeah.
So I just wanted to show that. I just wanted to mention that their armor, the breastplate and arm guards are made from carapace, just like the Parshendi or the listeners grow it. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Should we start? That's a good point. Should we start calling them the listeners, or should we continue calling them Parshendi?
I think maybe the listeners.
Maybe we should.
It's what they prefer.
It's what they would prefer. Right.
It's what they
maybe
call
we should
themselves.
Respect their wishes. And
why would you call them something else?
Because Alethis call them that, and we're mostly reading from their perspective. Yet again, perspective. So, yeah, it's just really interesting. But yeah, we can we can use both. I don't think they'll be. I don't think the Parshendi people. I don't think the listener people will be insulted if we call them Parshendi.
We can talk about that another time.
Of course.
It's a thing that I have about language, and that is how arbitrary it is. Now, I know that there's probably some linguists out there that probably aren't going to agree with me on that. And they might say that, well, you can only say this in this language and not in this language.
Right.
To which I would say, well, then that means that that language isn't complete yet. Mm-hmm. So if there is something that you can say in one language but not in another, then that other language still has some more work to do.
Right.
And you have to continue inventing more utterances. At the end of the day, though, it's just the utterance itself isn't important. What's important is whether you communicate it or not.
Right.
So at least that's my opinion.
Well, thanks for joining us at the Language Lounge with Jack.
Language Lounge.
Well, that's the episode, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us. We are going to be doing I-4 next, Last Legion, which is it's going to be a really short episode because it's a pretty short chapter. We just couldn't fit it in with this one. It would have been too long of an episode, so we don't like having things over 2 hours, so... And we don't want you getting bored of us, so we try to keep that shit down. Anyways, thank you very much for joining us. We love you very much. Until next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Akathra.